Do you remember the moment that you saw yourself in God and God in you, and you were one with the universe and God and everybody? You were one with the prostitutes and pimps and priests and kings, and there was nobody on earth that was better than you nor less than you. And no one on earth was any less in Christ than anyone else.
Welcome to the Gospel Revolution Powercast for Friday, July 12, 2019, broadcasting from the heart of redemptionism, where we help you reclaim who you really are and help you remember what you didn't know you'd forgotten. We're coming to you from the heart of the gospel, where we say that a text without a context is a pretext for a subtext. And we have sure discovered that as we've been going through this book of Hebrews. We have seen all of those old dogs trotted out and then shot down with a 12-gauge. And we have seen how the gospel, according to Apollos, has been presented. But right now, with more consistent, persistent, repetitive CPR of the gospel, is the president and founder of the Gospel Revolution, Michael Williams. Hello, Mr. Michael.
Hello, Don Bartlett. How are you today?
I am really well. Have you been staying out of trouble this week? Have the police come calling? Anything like that?
As far as I know, unless there's something that I'm unaware of, you know, sometimes you can be completely illegal and not know it, but so far I think I'm okay.
How's Gail, mate?
It's same story, different days, and it's really funny how you measure a good day, but overall, I would say our days are fairly good for the situation that she's having to deal with. It's obvious, being here every day, that she is progressing. You know, it's really weird because you begin to try to root for this part of her brain shutting down before that part of her brain. And but, you know, we don't get to pick. Well, all of it is difficult to watch. You have no power over this disease to determine the order in which her brain continually ceases to function. I wish that there was a way that the part of her brain that's aware of what's happening to her would just cease to exist. And that would make it easier for her. I don't know what that would do for the situation here, but right now she is still becomes acutely aware that she has this disease, and you can see the sadness on her face, you know, when she can't speak or she can't remember something, but things are going well. Got my 4 hours a day that are off, and I use that time to get to the gym, and I have been taking advantage of that. Goodness, just a lot of good health things as a result of getting the excess fat out of my body. I'm down to 36 inches in the waist, and I'm going down to at least 34 inches. That's 2 more inches, and I'll be doing that over the next 3 months. The new goal is in another 3 months, and the diet that I've chosen is very easy. Drinking a half a gallon of water every day, which I've never done that before in my life, that has given me lots of changes that were unexpected. So a lot of real health benefits. I feel really good. My gym time gives me the wherewithal to deal with the rest of the day here.
Well, I can understand what you're saying about Gail. Last night, my wife asked me, in all seriousness, as we are putting ourselves to bed, where do we live?
Oh, bless her heart.
And she said, I know we live somewhere, but it's not here. Where do we live? And I understand exactly what you're talking. Many of our listeners understand exactly what you're talking about too, and we take our hats off to you, big boy, because to do what you've done, to do what you're doing, and family, just in case you're not aware, this is the first time you're listening maybe, Mr. Michael is taking care of his sister, Miss Gail. Miss Gail is in later stages of life. She's been an incredibly successful person in the real estate industry, and now she's an individual who is suffering from what we used to call dementia.
She has Alzheimer's.
That is really being God in the earth when you think about it. Taking a part of yourself and putting that part of yourself, in this case 20 hours a day, at somebody else's disposal for their betterment, for their highest good. That is really taking something seriously. It's taking your own gospel seriously, and that is what Mike has led me to invent the term God in the earth. That's what he's being. He's being what he really tells us to do.
Gospel Revolution.
Mike, we got up to the Heroes of Faith chapter last week.
We did.
And they showed up as being actually heroes of fear.
Well, they did indeed. Fear and weakness and insecurity.
We had Moses. I mean, a burning bush mm-hmm. talks to me. I'd be believing too. We had Noah in verse 6, I think it was, who moved out of fear.
Mm-hmm.
And moved by fear, he blah, blah, blah. We had everyone else we had there was, I mean, hiding Moses in a basket.
Yeah.
Not faith, fear.
Yeah.
So we discovered that the real hero of faith was one and only one, Jesus Christ himself.
I got a message from our friends in Australia, one group of our friends in Kingaroy.
Oh, jeez.
And they were absolutely thrilled with that chapter. I wasn't that impressed with last.
Well, the more we looked at each individual, the less impressive they got.
they became very boring to me, you know. It's like, wow, why couldn't we have just used one example and moved on? But, you know, Apollos likes to beleaguer the point and to make sure that we do not misunderstand what he is trying to communicate.
Just for you boys up in Kingaroy, I remember as a kid going to a brethren conference in Karoi, and there we sat in this little bitty church building, and I had to listen to this Scotsman talk all about the heroes of faith. Hebrews 11, I'll never forget that. I never so desperately wanted to be outside of a church building in my life. But but these boys in Kingaroy, I think they're a lot like me in as much as, well, they talk funny, but more than that, they've been raised on this, it's like dog food. Have you ever seen a bag of dog food? It's just stuff that...
I have seen one.
Well, yeah. It looks like coloured poop is what it looks like.
Oh, God.
You don't know what's in there. There's you know, cow lips and cow butts and there's chicken feet and there's everything in there, and it's presentable. Oh, it's so presentable. Your doggy's going to like this. It's so chunky. You could carve it. And all it is waste.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm sorry.
And, you know, the guys there in Kingaroy, I could tell that they're – because they've been communicating to me that the whole town is in an uproar about the gospel revolution and pros and cons.
Oh, wow. I wish I could be part of
it. Yeah, you might have to make a trip home just as a representative of the gospel revolution. Maybe you'll get stoned while we're there.
I could wish for much worse.
And, of course, this the writer Apollos, which still just does something to my entire psyche, my soul, to be able to affirm with absolute surety that Apollos did write the book of Hebrews. I just and the folks listening, Don, they are all convinced, and they see why we are convinced. And tell me where we are with coming up with our little pamphlet on why.
Oh, don't stab me! Don't stab me! Not publicly. Stab me privately.
There you go. I mean, are we? Is that something in the process?
Yeah, it is. I've thrown myself out of a number of Facebook groups simply because I've had to come to the stage of saying, what the hell is important for me to do with the rest of my life? I'm 67, and And I say to myself, I have to get this done. I have to get this, and I've got to get the book on the two churches in the New Testament finished before I pack up my my pack of cards and go home. So, all right, you're going to push me.
Yes. We need this book on why we know Apollos wrote this.
Why don't we put a cap on this, a sunset clause of 4 weeks? I've got a lot of, I've got almost all the data that I need together in a database, and all I need to do now is to put it out in the form of a book. Awesome. Anybody who wants to help me, anyone, just let us know, and I'm right here.
Wonderful. And because I know that a lot of people are looking forward to that. They want to see that laid out succinctly, even though we've done it on the shows. It's not like having it in a readable form. And I certainly understand they're anxious. I'm really looking forward to seeing it myself. And we've gone through the material. But that that fact that the writer of Hebrews is no longer a mystery, I never battled against that. Paul, I always said I was persuaded that Paul wrote this letter.
Me too.
But I never could declare definitively that Paul did write the letter, because there is nothing that says that. And then we start looking at the differences in the message and the way it's presented, the language, everything. And then to find all of those very clear markers in all the other writings in Acts and other places in the New Testament about Apollos, and Paul giving him quite preeminence. He certainly did not give Peter, James, and John this preeminence. He didn't give it to Barnabas. He didn't give it to Silas. He didn't give it to anyone. But boy, did he ever affirm Apollos and his ability to teach and share the gospel. In fact, said that Apollos was building on his work and continuing on the foundation that Paul had laid, and made it very clear that that's what he was doing. Apollos was a teacher of such prominence that he was, Paul said, some say I'm of Paul and some say I'm of Apollos. And so to think that Apollos was not on the scene doing the teaching would be absolutely silly. And it's also silly to think that a man of that prominence of affirmation from Paul, to where that people were actually listening to one or the other, that he wouldn't have a letter something written somewhere. Would have just been, tantamount to Paul not writing a letter.
I think that the fact that everyone and their dog for the last 2,000 years have brought up Apollos' name, but never ever fixed on him.
No.
I think that's really interesting, and I think also it shows the fear that governs the minds of good people when they don't want to go against the main flow.
Mm-hmm. I think one of the things also that really it astounded me, because I did not know this at all, that of the bucket list that Martin Luther had of changes he wanted, of which many he did accomplish, some he never looked at that desperately needed to be changed, that was changed by some others, but now have been altered by the gospel revolution in a way that we could never have predicted. But three of the things in his bucket list were: the book of Revelation should not be in the Bible, the book of James was a book of straw, and that Apollos was the writer of the book of Hebrews. He was convinced of those three things. And so it just, that to me, I thought, wow, you know, this is the 1500s, And this is not a new thing that the gospel revolution stumbled upon. We stumbled upon a very old controversy.
Well, you don't know. See, 1500 from AD dot. From AD dot to 1500, we don't know who, well, we do know that Eusebius thought James was nothing but deserved to be in any Bible. And we do know that James, for example, was in no, the whole of the North African church, whence came the Greek, a lot of the Greek-speaking church fathers, got on perfectly well without James for 400 years. 400 years.
Yes, exactly.
Now, the same goes for Revelation. You take 100 teachers of Revelation, and they're all out there. Oh, I know what it says. It says this. It says that. It says something else. No, it says a bit of this and a bit of that. You take 100 teachers of Revelation, and you're going to have 100 theories. I sat through enough conferences as a kid. In Australia, when I was a kid, we had, I think it was between 14 and 18 public holidays. Every damn last one of them was a conference, a church conference. And I sat through enough conferences as a kid to know what I'm talking about with this. You and they'd come with their charts. They'd come from Canada. They'd come from America. They'd come from Ireland. They'd come from Scotland. And they'd lay out their charts. And this was the age of this, and that was the age of blah, blah, blah. And this is when the beast is going to go and have an ice cream with his sister-in-law at the beach in Revelation chapter 50. I'm telling you, mate.
It's exhausting.
Oh, God, I wish Revelation had never been in the Bible. I do not see one damn good thing out of it, except the fact that the churches allegedly Jesus was addressing in chapters 2 and 3 of Revelation, apparently they had all these old bad Jewish sins that John said, they're the sins. You got sins, they're old Jewish sins.
Yeah.
Okay. Stop.
Regardless
roll me up and put the carpet bag around me, mate.
Regardless of the view on Revelation, including mine, you have to play Twister. That's all there is to it. And I can put right hand on red and left foot on blue and so forth and so on. And I can show you the gospel in the book of Revelation. But it's not something that you can read through like you can this book of Hebrews and clearly get the understanding of what the teacher or the writer is saying.
Well, he doesn't even know what he's saying.
It seems as though, yeah.
Well, he quotes the Old Testament prophet who says that God will wipe tears from all faces, and he turns that upside down to say, and in chapter, is it 21, I think, that God's going to wipe all tears from some faces.
Yeah, to talk about an upended, uprooted, and inverted statement, and how in the world that became selective, and man, but didn't it fit into the current view of Christianity at the time that only a few were going to make it? And he quoted a verse that had nothing to do with a few and turned it into a verse that had to do with just a few.
Oh, man.
And then again, you know, I was talking to somebody the other day, and it's just, you know, we don't know who the John was. We everybody speculates as to which John it was that wrote Revelation. We don't absolutely know which the John was that wrote 1st, 2nd, 3rd John. We know who the John was that wrote the Gospel of John.
Well.
And even that can be questioned, I'm quite sure. But to say that we know for sure that these guys were the same guy, weren't the same guy, goodness gracious, it really is quite amazing, especially since we're talking about the book of Revelation.
Yeah.
So what we have gleaned from this is, number one, a writer. My gosh, we have a writer. Oh, wow, we have a party who is responsible for this. We know his background. We know his life. We know his education. We know his relationship to Paul. We know his relationship to John the Baptist. We know his relationship to, and isn't it amazing? He was so well versed in the doctrines of John the Baptist that it prevented him from being able to see the revelation of who Christ was.
Ain't that something? He had to be around. He had to have heard of Christ. He had to know Christ was walking on the earth. He had to have heard this devout Jew who was a follower, a disciple of John the Baptist. He had to have been aware there was a bloke walking around Palestine raising the dead. I mean, isn't that what Jesus said to John the Baptist's disciples? John the Baptist sends his disciples saying, "Are you the one? Are you the one? Are you the one?" And he says, "Well, tell them what you see. Don't tell them what I say. Tell them what you bloody see." And it's just like, Apollos had to know. But what you just said last, he had to know, but it was like, you know.
Well, it was the blinders that were on. Those scriptures, yeah.
Yeah, that when Paul said scales fell from his eyes, you got to wonder what they were blinding him to.
And, you know, and what those scales were. And the scales were the doctrines that led up to Christ, because they were designed to do two things, reveal and conceal.
Hang on, say that again.
The teachings that led up to Christ were designed to reveal and to conceal.
Wow.
And, you know, he exhausted the time in which they were designed to conceal, but then it takes a mirror image view of those things, if you will, to see the reveal, the big reveal that came, you know, through the work of the cross. And Apollos missed that. Now, we can surmise as to why. We know he didn't miss the cross. We know he did not miss this information. It would have been virtually impossible to have missed the information, especially somebody involved with someone like John the Baptist. He just absolutely would not have missed that information. But somehow it didn't click. But the scales that should have all fallen off, that eventually did fall off of Apollos with a little bit of teaching from Paul and his life being interrupted by Priscilla and Aquila in just a simple meeting. You know, and a lot of our gospel revolutionaries can relate to this. You know, they just went to a simple meeting. Just like with Don, he listened to a simple tape and suddenly these scales. But you see, the scales that fell from our eyes, as we have learned, is the exact same scales that fell from Apollos' eyes.
Oh, yeah. You hear the bell that cannot be unrung.
Yes, you do. So those scales, and this is the odd thing, is that Peter, James, and John did everything that they could do to make sure those scales did not fall from people's eyes, because it was not to their advantage. They all wanted a place. We can affirm to you that they were concerned about who they were, what place they would hold in this new kingdom. And boy, when you have something personally invested like that, you can't stop and question yourself at all. You just can't do it.
Well, we saw the truth of what you just said when their mummy, the mummy of James, was it James and John, in the Gospels, sidles up to Jesus and say, "Hey, listen, when you come into your kingdom, can my two boys sit on your right and your left hand?" I mean, this was the thinking. This was just the thinking.
And, you know, Christianity just does not take into consideration the reality of the before teaching by Jesus and by others, such as John the Baptist, and the difference between that and the teaching that came after the resurrection. And I always think it's very interesting that Peter, James, and John only got the before teachings and understanding of Christ from Christ, but Paul at the very same time gets a completely informed after the cross teaching. 3 years that he was in this being taught mode. And so that would definitely make a huge difference, since there was the conceal was before the cross. Things were designed to conceal. And then after the cross, it was designed to reveal.
If you took Paul out of the Bible, What would you have left?
We would have no gospel whatsoever.
If you took Paul out of the Bible, would Jesus's death have meant anything?
No, he would just been a Gandhi. He would have been a religious leader who was martyred, and that would be it. There would be nothing else to the work of Christ, the sacrifice of Christ. His teachings would have always been translated into performance and works, and this is what he said, the great teacher said this and that, not realizing that when he said them under the auspices of a covenant that now does no longer exist.
If you took Paul out of the Bible, would Peter, James, and John have told us anything about justification?
Not at all, no.
What about glorification?
No.
What about predestination?
None there.
What about Christ and the church, like Paul talked about when he was talking about marriage and then said, he tipped it upside down and said, what I'm actually talking about is Christ and the church. What about that? Would we have known anything about that?
Nothing.
What about sanctification? Would we have known anything?
Nothing there.
What about man being righteousified through the imputation of Christ, one actions? What about that?
Nothing there. There would be no gospel there. Oh, man, it's shockingly stark that the gospel would be virtually missing from the New Testament if it weren't for Paul's writings. And, of course, now, as we know, the writings of Apollos here in Hebrews. There is nothing about the writer of Hebrews that agrees with anything that Peter, James, and John taught. The difference, one of the big differences, Don, that was part of the tipping of the scales was that this man never addressed his detractors. Now, Paul couldn't resist it. Paul was a scrapper. He liked to scrap with these guys.
They knew how to push his buttons.
They did, and he responded with full trumpets, you know. The fact of it is that he responded with full trumpets, and yet the Christianity has taught us to ignore those trumpets that sounded, you know, from Paul. They all agree. It's like, what could be so ignorant about this? And it is ignorance. It's not stupidity, because ignorance means to ignore and to ignore the facts.
It's more than that. It's invincible ignorance. It's selective ignorance. It's ignorance that has just gone to seed, actually.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, we had gospel revolutionaries that dropped out years ago, and they just stopped learning because they didn't like the fact that they had to think, that they had to...
Are you ringing them up during the pledge drive to annoy them?
No, most of them we don't have a lot of contact with. They still affirm their love for us, and of course I affirm my love for them. But
well, I don't know about that. Benny Hinn and Joseph Prince don't seem to do that.
No, that's for sure. But our everyday gospel revolutionaries, I just feel so sorry for them that they dropped out so early because they just weren't wanting to think anymore.
Why is that, do you reckon, Mike? I mean...
Well, I understand it. You know, I do understand it. And who knows? Maybe I would have got tired of thinking also. Maybe I would have just chucked the whole thing if I hadn't been in the position that I'm in with this ministry. And I had to get up and say something. And the information had brought me to a point to where that, you know, I couldn't go back. And I couldn't stay still, so I was just in a position to where that I really had no choice. But were there times I thought, man, this is just, my God, why don't we just chuck the whole thing? This is just so messed up.
Except for the income. Except for the money.
Oh, yes, that large income that we've gotten by making this stand.
Yeah, but I've often wondered, why is it that people are, and I think, and I wrote an article in gospelrevolution.com about why people don't leave their upbringing and things which are almost palpably wrong and things which don't make sense. Why do they stick to it? Why do Democrats who say, I was born a Democrat and I'll die a Democrat, I'm a whatever dog Democrat, the colour is that they call them. And the same with conservatives. You know, being human is not limited to one side of politics or one side of a bloody religion. It's just this, I'm not going to think for myself because I might lose all my friends or I might have to admit that my whole life was wasted or I don't know.
I had a long talk with Dr. Leslie about this. We've had two or three conversations about this, the development in our society where you must take your corner. And people will not allow you not to take your corner. If you say, well, I agree with some of this and I agree with some of that, whether it's political spectrum or not, you're just not allowed to do that. You will be forced to your corner, and that's why it frustrates people to talk to me about a lot of issues, because I just don't have a corner, and I'm not going to. I am going to think for myself, and I am going to look at research that maybe others may not look at, because goodness gracious, my exercise in the gospel has caused me to look behind that big curtain, you know, like they did in The Wizard of Oz. You know, it's just too tempting for me to look behind the curtain and see what's there.
Well, but don't think of an elephant.
For sure. But there is something, I tell you, the dog I'm hunting right now or hunting with, I think there's something about Peter, James, and John's non-gospel, the gospel which is not a gospel at all, as Paul declared their gospel to be, their gospel that caused the image of Christ to be, Don, that shocked me so when I was doing the teaching on Galatians, that Paul literally, in the context of what he was saying that the doctrines of Peter, James, and John had completely eroded the image of Christ out of the church of Galatia.
Wow.
He said, we're going to have to work to get the image of Christ back in you again. Mm. And now, I read that, and I went to a new level of, you know, you dudes just need to pack up and leave the country. When your teachings have been openly declared to have the power to erase the image of Christ in an entire group of people who had already heard Paul.
Some of which were never Jews to start with.
That is the truth. And and then still dealing with the issue of circumcision. Oh my gosh. And we know that the Gentiles, after the teachings of Peter, James, and John, they did deal with that, in so much that Paul's own cohort was persuaded to be circumcised. And he said even he is to be blamed.
Hey, do you know why the early Roman Catholic Church said, nah, circumcision doesn't have to, they agreed with Paul? Do you know why?
Why is that?
Because it hurt too much.
Yeah.
I mean, it'd have to be, wouldn't it, those wusses?
They certainly inflicted the pain on a lot of others in so many different ways, that's for sure. But there is a mindset that I'm very intrigued by right now, since we're just kind of talking about, well, I don't know whether we'll get to any of this today or not, Don. We may or we may not. But
and it just don't matter.
It just doesn't matter. But see, there is a mindset.
Oh, now look, I sounded Tennessee and you sounded Australian. I said don't, you said doesn't. You're just trying to show me up. I know what you're doing. I'm not an idiot. I know what you're doing.
Well, you've got to take your corner, Don. We can't have you out wandering around free range.
Well, that don't make no lick of sense to me, boy.
But there is a mindset. See, we've got to consider this fact. People of the Gospel Revolution, I'm asking you just to hear me out for a moment.
Uh-oh.
There has got to be a mindset that was established that we are so brain-chained to that it forces even our political discourse to go the direction that it does, I'm not talking about one being right and one being wrong. I don't go there. But it forces us to take a corner. It forces us to take a side. It forces us to separate. When something forces you to separate, there is something non-gospel in that. That's just all there is to it. There's something non-gospel about being forced to separate. Now, the reality of that is that, you know, we go back to, there's several starting points that we could take and follow the threads of this. Do you know that the countries in Africa who have passed the harshest morality laws, and including the laws about homosexuality to the point of death, do you know that all of those that have passed the harshest laws were they were colonies of Great Britain?
And do you know something else about them? They're the same countries. They are the self-same countries that practice female genital mutilation. In other words, female circumcision.
Yeah.
Oh, can you say hypocrisy?
That and a whole lot more. As I have learned, you know, here in the United States back in the 50s, the morality laws, they were, you know, they were there, but they were mostly overlooked. The laws about the practice of homosexuality and many other things of a moral nature, it was a wink and a nod and they went on. But in England, man, I tell you, they had people in the 50s turning people in for these moral failures, and people in the gay community had to go through chemical castration, and we never had that here. So this extreme harshness toward people who fail in the Christian arena on moral issues was exported around the world by Great Britain. And now we see it still there. Those roots are still there in these countries, and also supported by people from the United States that have realized that, you know, the United States just seems to be a total loss on the moral issues. So we'll go and impose these and resurrect these positions.
If you want to know more about this family, go back through the podcast, put in the search bar IHOP. It's not International House of Pancakes. It's the International House of Prayer. And you will see. And what we did in that show was we documented the words of African leaders, of church leaders in America, of gays. And what we discovered was that every church in America, almost every denomination in America, actually helps fund the killing of gays in Africa. Now, I don't say that lightly, but I do say it with great confidence. Go back and listen to IHOP, and you'll find out where the truth of what Mike is saying actually is.
Mm-hmm. And you see, there had to be an underbelly to this, of course. This was not originated out of the United States, but it has been supported by the most radical elements of Christianity here in this country. But this is all left over from the early parts of the 1900s, where the late 1800s and early 1900s, where the British Empire was spread around the planet. But all of these attitudes about these, and you know, think about it, folks. Goodness gracious, how many years did we have Catholics killing Protestants killing Catholics, people being beheaded for moral issues? Now, that mentality, if you go back into the 1500s and see the morality, that number one, within the ranks of their kings and their upper echelon, it was running rampant. But then the people, they had to be punished with execution for these moral crimes. Now, That is the mentality that was implanted in every British colony around the world, as the same as the places where America has spread. Whatever that mentality is, that mentality goes with it. And even though the British Empire has receded now in drastic ways, I mean, it's been like shrink wrapped. influences
for a nation or for an empire whose great claim was the sun never sets on the British Empire, shrink wrapped is a
Where do you come up with this stuff? It really has been shrink wrapped for sure, and but not quick enough for it not to leave its mark on these horribly cruel responses to being convinced that the gospel was a moral issue. And that really is what this boils down to, Don.
Well, the same can be said of slavery. Slavery had to be put to death in the UK before ever it could be put to death in America, because in America it was preached from the platforms of the Southern Baptist Convention. The churches in America, and it wasn't the only denomination. It wasn't the only denomination. It was preached openly and supported by the church, by Christianity itself, by the largest Protestant denomination in the world. It took William Wilberforce, an Englishman with a conscience, to actually affect the thinking of the House of Lords and the House of Commons in the UK before even the ships could be stopped. Remember, people like the man who wrote Amazing Grace, oh, we think so much of him, he wrote Amazing Grace because God turned his life around and now he doesn't ship slaves anymore. John Newton, I think his name was. I mean, what a crock of frog's droppings. No, he could see the writing on the wall. That's what he could see.
Yeah.
Here endeth the rant.
So what I'm looking at now, I mean, I am fixed on this. I'll do my job. We'll do our work here on this PowerCast, but I want you to know what I'm thinking about. And I know Don is thinking on these things, and people that I'm talking to are thinking on these things. How did we get here? The hell did we get here?
That Leslie Kazar has a lot to answer for, mate. I'm getting so much mileage. I think he runs this PowerCast, actually. I get so much mileage out of his comment about kindness trumps love. You can never misunderstand kindness, but you can misunderstand love. Tell us this thing he said again, mate.
Oh, yeah, it's Leslie's gospel. And
not the kindness and love thing. This thing that you're talking about now.
Oh, well, that's discussion. I couldn't tell you who said what. This has just been the conversation that's been going on. But the reality that I am facing by having these conversations and by just trying to get this up and out of me, that, you know, we have to look at how we got here.
How did we get here?
The one link that we're looking at now is Great Britain.
Now, you're talking about polarization of opinion. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay.
One of them is from Great Britain. Now, there's several. For any country, any government that has embraced religion and made morality the definition of good religion, they have exported this stuff around the world. Islam has done it. Great Britain. I mean, the very man who was responsible for ending the war probably 3 to 4 years early, World War II, the man who was responsible for saving possibly millions of lives was a gay man who went through chemical castration as late as those years in Great Britain, because he was accused of being a homosexual, and the laws said he either had to take this number of years in prison or go through chemical castration. He eventually, I think, committed suicide, if I remember the story, just because of the whole controversy. Now, here's one of the greatest minds that has ever lived. He was the inventor of what we know as computers today. This man was virtually executed because of his sexuality. A guillotine, a sword to the neck, a firing squad would have been much kinder than what these folks imposed on this man, and not just him, but thousands of others. All you have to do is mistake the gospel for a standard of morality, and you will become cruel. And not just to others, you'll become cruel to yourself. The living torment you will place yourself in. I'm speaking from a well-versed position here in this. I attempted suicide 3 times out of my Christianity. I thought the issue was my sexuality, but the issue was my Christianity. This should never have been a big issue for me. This should never have been the torment that it was. It should never have driven me to depression and suicide. It just should never have done that. Don, when I think about the place that I was in and then the horrible deception that I had to buy into to feel social acceptance, because nothing ever changed for me, going through having the devils cast out of me, becoming a great preacher of the whole Word of Faith movement, and becoming a, quote, in many people's views, America's foremost authority on demonology. And all of that was an attempt to be able to organize a mind that could be at peace. And all it did, it satiated that mind for a period of time, but then the pressure began to build again until there was an absolute disruption of life altogether once again, and the depression and all of this came back again. And that's when I began to realize, this is not my sexuality, this is my Christianity that is doing this to me.
So you're saying that you went to a mental institution, and the reason for it was that you could not get all of the realities in your mind playing happily together in the same mm-hmm. playground. Okay.
Yeah, I was so segmented in my, and compartmentalized in my life.
But that's what Christianity's about, is segmented salvation.
Well, and not only is it about segmented and compartmentalized salvation, but you see, that very mentality gets down to why we segment and compartmentalize our positions. We can't get along. We can't be friends. We can't be friendly. We can't be cordial. Because, see, our mind, all of this comes from the mind that is influenced by the doctrines of Christianity in our world. I realize in other parts of the world, it's ruled by the doctrines of Islam, doctrines of whatever. Whatever religion is based on morality being its expression of validity, you're going to find mental illness. You're going to find this division because, number one, we are divided. You cannot be a person who reaches out and includes if you are a person who has excluded yourself. You can't do that. It doesn't work that way. Now, the process in my life, and I know in yours also, is the inclusiveness that I have in my ability to embrace those that I disagree with has come in the ability to agree with myself. I'm not in contradiction with Mike Williams anymore. And the thing that I've shared with people and in public, on here, in private, the thing that the gospel has done is give me the ability to negotiate with myself. Man, I tell you what, you better learn how to negotiate with yourself, and you better negotiate with yourself from a gospel perspective. Because if you don't, the pressure begins to build on it. It's like tectonic plates rubbing against each other. And eventually, there's going to be massive destruction in your path.
How do you find yourself to even start that?
Well, you just have to start hearing the gospel, you know, and in your case, you heard a little tape that began to depressurize this fractional, divisional splitting of yourself down the middle of your own brain, and probably several fault lines running through your own brain and your own mind and your own soul. Let's see, if we've got those fault lines running through us, we are going to live those fault lines out.
Well, in my case, I've said it before that I spend every day anxious, like I was just finished a meal and was teeter-tottering on the back two legs of a chair, and that's how I spent my life, just balancing, always balancing, because I was so heavily invested in my Christianity. I was so heavily invested in my belief structure, in my mindset, in my worldview. You're going to hell and I'm not. I was so heavily invested in it, I could not separate it from myself. And it wasn't until I heard the bell that couldn't be unrung by you that I actually got to be able to stand back just a couple of paces to begin with, and now it's like a mile back. But back then it was only a couple of paces, and say, hang on, I know that that doesn't make sense when I really think about it. That is not me. And it's only then that I was able to identify me and separate me from my belief structure. And you're saying that that is the beginning of negotiating with yourself.
Yes. And once you are able to come to a negotiation with yourself that results in peace, negotiations are going to result in conflict or peace. The gospel, oh, please hear me. This is just so close to my heart. The gospel is the only thing that causes the negotiation with yourself to end in peace. Christianity, if you use...
Say that again, please.
The gospel is the only tool on this planet that will cause your negotiation with yourself to end in peace.
Oh, wow.
Christianity always...
Just shut up for a minute. I want people to actually get that. That is like, God. Okay, now speak again.
Yeah, and Christianity is just the opposite. You've got to understand, you can't have a message that is fragmented, that is divisive, that is exclusive, and not have that rule your mind with yourself. You see, you begin to negotiate with yourself based on those terms. So you wind up conflicted all of your life. Now,
you think because you're invested in this, you think that you're only being honest and doing the right thing.
Oh, my gosh, yes. Do we remember those days? Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. And the situation that I'm in here, I think the thing that most amazes me is that I know that under Christianity, I could never have handled this. I just could not have done it. I would have found fault with my sister, for God's sakes. I would have found fault.
Your own sister,
My own sister, who is advanced stages of Alzheimer's. I would have judged. I would have, you know, if you ever want to get in a position where being right just simply is not profitable, be a caregiver for somebody with Alzheimer's.
Yeah, try loving. Try operating in somebody else's highest interest, no matter what it costs you personally. Mate.
And that includes your opinions. That includes what they're saying is incorrect. What they're saying is not true. What they're saying is not helpful. But you interjecting something into that to change that, then that's where they get into conflict with themselves, because that's their world.
Gospel Revolution.
So and of course the other part of that is organized now because of the gospel is then you begin to navigate. If you negotiate, you can navigate.
What's that mean? Do you mean you can navigate with your sister easier now because you've negotiated peace in yourself? Is that what you're saying?
That is probably the best example we could come up with in the situation. But see, I would have been, see, and here's the inversion. You see, Christianity tries to get you to negotiate with people and navigate your brain. It's like, no, my brain should be at peace and my navigation should be with other people and situations. You get these inverted, and I'm telling you what, you are going to be in trouble. I know what I'm saying. Most gospel revolutionaries have already experienced or are experiencing. I'm still experiencing it, but we've never put words to it, maybe.
And we're all doing it differently, which is...
Everyone.
Wouldn't that just be like God, the Creator? Wouldn't that just be like...
Absolutely. People say, well, God, you say God's not personally involved. Well, you know, God can't live in you and be a part of everything without being a part of everything. Now, it is not defined the way that Christianity or any other religion defines it, but I don't do anything that God's not involved in because we are one. You don't do anything that God is not involved in because we are one. I don't try to separate that. I don't try to look and see, there's the other part that you look at. Well, is God in this or is God not in this? Oh, dear God Almighty, what horrible.
Let me tell you a little story that will help you understand what Mike's saying there, and I think everyone does. And that is, I went to pastor a church in Nashville. Now, I wasn't the senior pastor. There was another pastor there over me who eventually told me to stop feeding the homeless and get a real job. But during that whole process where I was told not to feed homeless people, and this church was in the dead center of the projects. If you know the South Sixth area of Nashville, you know exactly the projects I'm talking about. Seven murders there in my first year. And then I lived in the area. So I have some standing in this. And when the church was telling me, no, stop feeding homeless people, I asked them. I said, because one of the people said, this is not our calling. And I said, are the Ten Commandments your calling? And they said, yes. Oh, yes. We've got to keep the Ten Commandments. I said, what about Isaiah where he says, visit those in prison, feed the hungry, clothe the naked. What about that? Is that a calling or a commandment? They had nothing to say except stop doing it.
Yeah.
Someone said once, the art of the bamboozle is in not letting people know they've been bamboozled. It's far easier to bamboozle someone than for them to believe that they've ever been bamboozled. I'm sorry, Mike, I just had to throw that in.
No, and it's very apropos for sure. But the comments I remember, oh my gosh, the ignorance of figuring out, is God in this? Is God not in this? Is God in this decision? God's in every decision, whether you make a good one or a bad one, you know? And, oh my gosh, I remember as I was coming out of all of this, this has been pushing back to 15, 16, 17 years ago. And one of the religious people in our area there in Olney came to the house, and there was this issue about property and a youth center, and she wanted to start this, and oh, this person left this and this and that, and we've got it all figured out now. And her terminology she used to try to convince me and Hazel to participate in, she made this statement, and it sent a live wire shocking right through me. And what she said that sent that live wire through me was this phrase, I can just see God all over this. And it just so revolted me. I'd never been revolted by something like that before. I bought into it. But you see, my mind had been being renewed, and now suddenly this common statement was now foreign to me.
Oh, wow.
It was foreign to me. It made me want to throw up. It made me want to pass out. It made me want to run. There is something so desperately wrong with this? And of course, that project that God was all over didn't go anywhere whatsoever. This issue of being able to navigate through this life and navigate with others, folks, you know, when you're out, you know, I watched the, you know, 4th of July celebrations and, the 200th year anniversary, and they had all the tall ships and the all of this out on Boston Harbor, and they're all out there, and there's hundreds of them in this small harbor, but they all are navigating around each other, and so that they can all have their own place in the same place, but you've got to navigate with consideration of the other ship. You just can't get in your damn boat, put up your sails, and say, we're going over there. No, you can't do that.
Yes, you can. This is America. You can do any damn thing you like, mate. Come on.
And wind up at the bottom of the Boston Harbor, too, including the other casualties that you take with you.
They don't matter. They're in the polar opposite. They don't. They're probably, I don't know, liberals or conservatives or something
polar opposite for sure.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
But you see, when you navigate, it's not just so that you can achieve your goals. Navigation is so that others can also achieve theirs.
Tell us about this.
It's called being considerate. It's called being willing to say, you know, he's in a dinghy, I'm in a full sailing ship. Does that make him irrelevant, or do I?
Well, pretty much.
Do I navigate?
It's America. Pretty much
to accommodate. The dinghy, or does the dinghy not navigate? Navigate to avoid me?
Are you going to keep talking over me? Hey,
as long as you keep interrupting me.
So now we want a real life example. How did you navigate with this woman?
Which one?
The one that wanted to, she still got all over it.
Oh, well, when she said that, I realized that she was sailing her ship in a direction that I wasn't about to go. But I didn't say that. I didn't say, well, that's stupid. Well, you know, you're just another ignorant, religious person. We smiled, we nodded our heads, and, you know, maybe I would have had words of wisdom to say to her now. I may or may not have, but with the tools that I had, we didn't oppose her. We didn't go around behind her back saying, you know, she's really off her rocker and, you know, they're trying to do this. You know, it's never going to work. It's like, hey, go for it. You know,
did it ever happen?
No, it never happened. No. And the same debate in that city about this land is still going on to this day. And everybody gets a revelation from God as to how it's supposed to be used.
You love that? Don't you love the stories about the guy that says to the girl, the Lord told me you're going to marry me. And the girl looks at him in the eye and says, well, when he tells me that, I'll believe him.
Yeah, exactly.
And that is one of the traps and tricks of Christianity. Have you ever noticed how when somebody says, the Lord told me, like this woman was saying, I see God all over it, that's the end of the conversation.
That's it.
How do you argue with God?
And that was the end of the conversation that day, you know. So
how do you navigate with others on a larger scale even?
Well, that it's number one, it's respect. And as far as you embracing that there's people around you that don't think like you.
But most Christians are respectful.
Well, I sometimes don't see that. When it comes to promoting an agenda, they will want you to take your corner. So, you know, and a lot of people don't understand my, you know, like when I'm at the gym, I don't ever talk about the gospel even because, you know, I've got something there. I'm navigating a workout. I'm navigating having good relationships with the people that are there and good workouts. The owner wanted to know more about me, so I told him, and turned out that it was really affirming information, and we really haven't talked about it since then. And we will again if he would like to speak about it again, but I'm not pressing the issue.
What other things beside respect do you find? See, I found that something's happened in the gospel to me where I have to say, well, heck, that's interesting.
Yeah.
I never thought that way 6 months ago, and now I'm thinking differently.
Well, that is so true, Don. And I tell you, I woke up just within the last week, and I've done this several times in the last year or more, trying to ascertain just how much the changes have taken place. Now, let me make this absolutely clear. I have not changed at all.
Are you sure of that?
I know I have not changed at all. I have the same desires, the same moods, the same everything. Mm-hmm. But the edges have been rubbed off. My ability to navigate and negotiate in these situations has gone off the chain. I'm having a hard time relating to my BG days, you know, before gospel. So, and then
your BGs, your BGs.
Yes,
days.
My BGs days. So this incredible piece, I don't know. Anybody can talk about being at peace, but and you know, you're talking about living life on two legs of a four-legged chair, I think that would describe a great deal of mine, the fears, the anxiety, worry was just, oh my gosh, worry. And I just virtually do not worry anymore. It's just gone. Even when difficult situations come up, I begin to navigate. I don't start it's like, why are we going to worry about it, And everybody knows that worry doesn't accomplish anything, but the gospel has actually placed me into an arena to where I don't worry. I would have to conjure up a worry. I would have to fake a worry to get worried again. Yeah, but Mike, boy, this could all blow up and this could just, everything could change. It's like, yeah, it really could. And what would you do? Well, I don't know yet, but we would face that when it comes. But worrying about somebody out on the road, worrying about where someone is or what they're doing, if they're all right, I'm just so worried. Those words sound so foreign to me anymore. And because in our culture, we are so taught that if you don't worry, you don't care.
Mm.
Now, I tell you, you can find lots of ways to care without worrying. Because number one, you're probably going to shorten your own life, so you're not going to be around to care if you keep worrying. But I have to,
That's true. That is so true. The connection between our worry and our revenge thoughts and our feeling betrayed thoughts and physical sickness. More and more, I'm starting to see that. There's something there that I never saw before.
There are connections, and that's been proven, in a lab, So the worry, guilt, oh my gosh. I could not conjure up a feeling of guilt if I sat desperately trying to.
I proved that myself once.
Is that right?
Yeah. I played heavy metal music to mice. And they all died. But when I played the Oak Ridge Boys, they seemed to perk up and they came back to life. It was a miracle, I think.
And you didn't feel guilty about it? Is that what you're trying to say?
Oh, hell, how do you feel guilty when you're having that much fun?
Well, it is, for those of you listening, folks, I realize we're going to cap this off with the last verse of chapter 11 because I think it's apropos. It's kind of wrapping up everything that Apollos has taught us in a daily application. So what does this mean, concerning the price of tea in China? Well, here is what this all means, folks. Apollos' teachings and Paul's lead you to a salvation for your soul, a renewing of your mind, and this is the renewing. You're not renewing your mind from dirty thoughts to righteous thoughts. You're not renewing your mind from negative thoughts to positive thoughts. You're renewing your mind to be able to function in the capacity it was intended to without all of these encumberments. I just think we're created to function in a way that is healthy, that is good. Now, this doesn't mean that I do this perfectly all the time, because I'm not trying to do it perfectly.
And family, family, I can tell you, he just told you the truth then.
And since I'm not trying, it's just not an issue. I either handle it productively or I handle it otherwise. But what do you do when you do that? You back up and you go at it again.
There you go.
Don't declare yourself a failure and, oh, I'm never going to try that again. I should have known this. Man, those hot button words. Well, this always happens to me.
Those broad sweeping statements. Oh.
Well, you always do this. You always. I detest them. I detest them.
I knew it would never work when I tried it.
Yeah. And wouldn't you know it, this always happens to me.
Oh, boy.
And, the people around me are just saturated with these terms that they don't realize are their vomit points. This I call that a vomit point, and I just started calling it that right now. That's when your own soul has gotten so sick of you, you just turn around and vomit.
Oh, there you go.
And your own soul is vomiting this stuff out. Well, I should have known. This is what always happens to me. Well, I should have known this. My God, how stuck are we? People want to know the benefits of the gospel and why we share it. This is the reason, folks.
Mm.
When you find what everybody on the planet is looking for, you want to share it.
Yeah.
And this is what the whole planet is looking for. That's why I'm convinced that the long-term effect, we will be long past our deaths before we begin to exhaust the effects of Christianity on this planet. But we are now headed toward a future that could possibly be affected by the gospel. What is that effect? The effect of the gospel is, number one, that you are able to negotiate with yourself. Why? Because you are now no longer in guilt. You know, that's the key, number one key. All right, let's get this right down to where the rubber meets the road. What is the one thing that prevents negotiation with yourself being successful for you? Number one is guilt. Number one is guilt. Number two is guilt. Number three is guilt. What prevents you from navigating successfully with others? Number one is judgment. Number two is judgment. And number three is judgment.
Mm.
So we have these two elements about existence and living in this life. And if you, but you know, the one thing that is going to hang you up, it will hang you and render you powerless, is the need to be right.
Oh, well.
Now, if you have to prove that you're right, you have ceased all negotiation and you've ceased all navigation. If you have to be right. But see, that's what guilt and judgment does. Guilt causes you to have to be right. Judgment is a declaration of the fact that you think you're right. You're persuaded that you're right. So if you want to measure where you are in all of this, as I do myself, then that's the very place to look, is that we are now in a position to where we being right is not all it was cracked up to be. Folks, even the things that we've shared with you all the way through the book of Hebrews, let me tell you something. We don't know that we're right. Oh my God, you just taught all this and you said all of that and you don't even know whether or not you're right. Well, we are persuaded that we are up to this point.
And given the results that we found.
Yes, and given the results that we've found and the impressions that it leaves upon the heart and the mind, yes. But you see, when I need to be right, that is the terminus point of thinking. I don't want to ever stop thinking. If anybody's got anything they want to say that shows me that something we said or the way we interpreted something or the way that we defined something or the way we read something was incorrect or there's another way to do it, then bring it on, folks. We have not closed the book of Hebrews and said, now that's our position. No, that's our thoughts on this. Are you okay with that? Are you okay with this is our thoughts? This is what we are seeing, and this is what we're seeing now. But Mike, you got to know. I don't got to. I don't have to say I know. I don't have to say that. I don't have to say I'm right. I know what I know within the perimeters of which I've gathered that knowledge. I don't know when those perimeters might change. The fact of it is, this is something that we understand to this point, but being right about it is not our issue. We're not trying to prove we're right and somebody else is wrong. We are simply presenting you with information that you may never have heard. You don't have to agree with us to make you right. Well, if I don't agree with them, man, I'm out. No, you're not out if you disagree with us. We welcome that disagreement because that is the ground in which we grow to where that navigation with ourselves and negotiation with all of life around us is even possible. If you have to be right, you are dead in the water.
I think we can wrap this up with a couple of thoughts that you've raised up in me, mate. And we're talking about, this week, we're talking about negotiation, negotiating with yourself, and navigating with other people. Now, I've heard Michael reference this earlier in other podcasts and teachings, but we've never quite brought it, the focus on it the way we have today. As far as negotiating with yourself, I want to just remind us of this verse, which I'm reading out of Kindle. The way Jesus saw himself, which is Philippians 2, verse 5.
Oh, my God,
Jesus
so good.
Saw himself is the only valid way to see yourself.
Yeah.
His being God's equal in form and likeness was official. Yeah. His sonship did not steal the limelight from his father, neither did his humanity distract from the deity of God. You know, you're one with God, my friend.
That's some good negotiation right there.
And though, whoa. And I want to also talk a little bit about navigating with others. And I think that we taught on this pretty well in the last few podcasts. And that was at the end of chapter 10 of Hebrews, verse 24, let us think of ways to motivate one another to acts of love and good works. Now, butting heads, that's my speciality, by the way. I'm just smart enough to butt heads and save myself looking too stupid and also make the other person look stupid. I'm just smart enough for that, but not. I don't see God in me enough to stop it sometimes.
We're all learning.
It's confession time. Let us think of ways to motivate one another to acts of love and good works. I'm in the middle of doing this, and I can't necessarily say that. Well, I'll let you know when I've succeeded, all right? We'll just leave it there. Romans 12 is a chapter that is alleged to have been written by Paul, and verse 18 says, if it is possible, as much as lies within you. Now, he's talking to me. Okay, this writer is talking to me. Live peaceably with all men. He knew that I was going to have problems in this area. But this talks about navigation. Whoever wrote this knew a little bit about navigation.
Yeah.
Paul definitely in 1 Thessalonians knew about navigation when he wrote, "Therefore encourage one another." 1 Thessalonians 5, verse 11. "Therefore encourage one another and build each other up." Therefore encourage one another and build each other up. That's our job, family. Our job is to provoke each other to love and good works. Let's edify each other. Let's navigate with the mindset that being at one with God brings us peace and encourages us to negotiate with ourselves and see past everything that gets in the way of that.
Yeah, and even Hebrews brings this out. It's really odd maybe that we have come to this, and maybe not so odd, because even Hebrews talks, celebrate your feast days, don't celebrate your feast days. The statements like, don't let anybody judge you about new moons or feast days or any of that. Do it if you want to. Don't do it if you want to. Why is everybody got to be all, as they say today, all up in your business? So
actually, it's all up in your business.
So, goodness. And of course, the closing verse again, to me, really does speak volumes about this issue. The last two verses, "And these all, having obtained a good report through the faith of God, received not the promise through the faith of God."
Even through the faith of God, they received not the promise.
They received not the promise. God having provided some better thing for us, through the faith of God, that they without us should not be made perfect without the faith of God.
Yeah. Because we're looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of faith.
Oh, yeah. There you go. I think that's a good segue into another program. I don't know how long it's going to take us to get through 12, but as you can see, our approach failed. But in our failure, look what we found.
Wow. And so it is that we must leave you, family and friends. If you would like to know anything about the Gospel Revolution, then call all of, call Benny Hinn, call Joseph Prince, call Kenneth Copeland. All of these people once said that we were the greatest thing since sliced bread, but they think a little differently now. Or you could call us on
832-318-9339.
And hear it from the horse's mouth. And speak to us about how you want to participate, or go to www.gospelrevolution.com and hit the connect link. Hit any link you like. Just enjoy freedom. Just enjoy freedom. So now it's good night from myself, Don Bartlett, from the GR Studios right here in Gospel City, USA.
And it's good night from Michael Williams here in Oak Ridge, Tennessee. Being so grateful for all of you guys. You've all influenced my life so profoundly. Your questions, your conversations, and I do apologize that those conversations are more limited now than what they were in the past. But right now, that's life, and we will navigate that. But goodness, there is not a person that's listening to this, unless it's somebody I just don't know, that has not impacted my life tremendously. And I appreciate all of you guys. Just your questions, your comments, your insights, it all culminates in this wonderful, wonderful thing about being able to negotiate with yourself and navigate your way through life with others. You know, sometimes to navigate with others, if their ship gets so erratic, you may have to navigate around them at a little greater distance, because they're not safe to themselves and they're certainly not safe to you. So don't judge yourself because you have to navigate around something a little bit more skillfully simply because of the erratic nature in which others are trying to navigate their ships through this narrow channel of life. It happens. It's not a judgment. It just happens. We love you guys. Negotiate with yourself kindly. Negotiate with yourself on gospel terms, not Christian terms. And navigate the same way. Navigate according to the gospel.
We sure hope that you enjoyed today's PowerCast. And remember, we'll be here to do the same thing all over again next week. Only
always better.
There you have it.
Oh, sinner, do not stray from the straight and narrow way. For the Lord is surely watching what you do. If you approach the devil's den, turn round, don't enter in, lest the hand of the Almighty fall on you. He'll f*** you up, yes, God will f*** you up, if you dare to disobey his stern command. He'll f*** you up, don't you know he'll f*** you up, so you better do some praying while you can. Long ago a man named Lot had a wife he thought was hot, but she could not stop her black and sinful ways. You know it was her own damn fault when God turned that to salt. That's the way he used to work back in those days. He f***ed him up, he really f***ed him up, when the people went and turned their backs on him. He can f*** you up. No, he'll f*** you up, just like he f***ed the people up back then. I used to have a friend named Ray, who walked that evil way. He cursed and drank and broke his neighbor's fence. You know Ray was full aware that some sheep were over there, and he knew them in the biblical sense. God f***ed him up. He went and f***ed Ray up, went and paid him back for all his wicked sins. He f***ed him up, f***ed that boy completely up. Now he's married to a Presbyterian.
Use only as directed. Absolutely no warranty expressed or implied. Contents under pressure. Use in a well-ventilated area. Do not use while operating a motor vehicle or heavy equipment. No user serviceable parts inside. One size fits all. Parental guidance suggested. Severe pain has sometimes been reported and in rare cases, death. Limited time offer. Call now to ensure your prayer blessing. This supersedes all previous notices. This information is subject to change without notice. At all participating churches near you.
Gospel Revolution.